And welcome to the Department of Sociology Seminar Series. My name is Francesco Ghilari, and I'm head of the Sociology Department, and I'm delighted to welcome Valeria Bordone for this first seminar of the series. And you can see the title of the seminar. Just a little bit of background on Valeria. Her first degree is in economic statistics and social sciences at Bocconi, and then she did a master at the LSE in health, population, and society. Later on, she went for a doctorate in sociology at the University of Mannheim in Germany, one of the kind of empirical strongholds in European sociology, and she's currently a postdoc at the Wittgenstein Center in Vienna, which is a consortium of various institutions. And her recent work, as you can see, is on intergenerational relationships, so we want to know whether grandparental care pays off. Floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being here to this seminar. And thanks, Francesco, for inviting me. What I'm presenting you today is an overview of the work I've been doing with Bruno Arpino from the University Pompeu Fabra in Barcelona on grandparenting and the effects of grandparental child care. Let me just briefly introduce you the reason why grandparenting and the study of grandparenting might be important. Well, we know that the demographic changes in terms of mortality and fertility, so like increase of longevity and decrease of fertility, have changed the shape of the population structure. But what has changed is also the family structure. So also the family structure has become more long and thin. That's the way we say. So what does it mean? It means that it's more and more likely that within the family there are intergenerational relationships rather than relationship with persons of the same, belonging to the same generation. That, of course, might create challenges, but also opportunities at the family level, at the society level, and within pairs, within diets, whether these are elderly elderly parents and older children, or grandparents and grandchildren. This is all part of the family relationships. In particular, as I said, there are also opportunities and not only challenges deriving from these changes in the shape of a family. And one of these opportunities is the role of grandparents. Why? Well, because they are living right now overlapping lives with their grandchildren, which are much longer than it was in the past. So starting from this introduction, we thought it would be interesting to see whether grandparents might benefit, or whether there might be some type of effects of doing grandparental child care. We derive our framework, so to say, from recent works which have shown that engagement in social activities for older people may be positive in terms of outcomes of health and cognition. Well, grandparenting can be considered as a social activity. It's indeed one activity that persons do. And we derive from these two research questions. These are two separate works, which basically come one from each other. And I'm presenting both of these today. The first one is at an advanced stage. In fact, it's sort of completed, although, of course, I'm open to your comments and questions. And we are looking at the effect of doing grandparental child care on the cognitive functioning of elderly people. As a consequence of this, as I will explain to you later, there come several other questions. And one of them is whether doing grandparental child care might have a competing effect somehow with doing some of the other social activities which the literature tells us are positive for health outcomes. The studies of grandparenting mainly are framed within a concept of altruism. So if you look at the literature on grandparental child care, it mainly looked with eyes of altruism. They think grandparents look after grandchildren because they are altruistic, because they love their grandchildren, they love their children, and this therefore might have effects on the grandchildren and the children. Many studies have looked at effects on the middle generation. So, for example, having available grandparents who can look after grandchildren may favor mother's labor force participation, fertility choices. But it has been seen also to be positive for grandchildren. Performance in school seem to be good when grandparents are taking care of grandchildren. Some studies have also looked at the effect on the welfare system, so whether the fact that grandparents look after grandchildren may have a societal impact, and of course this is going through the labour market participation of women. But the economists have also thought that there might be some sort of egoistic behaviour of grandparents. They might not do it simply because they love their children and grandchildren, but also because they might expect something in return later on in life when they are in need. Our question is whether there might be returns to grandparents in the short term. So what happens exactly at the time when grandparents are looking after their grandchildren? Some studies have done it. However, there have been some issues, and therefore the results are quite mixed. There is a slight prevalence of negative effects, but it's mainly literature coming from the US, where it's quite common to have grandparents as substitute parents, so like families with a skipped generation. And of course, this might be very different from the most common grandparenting, which is simply taking care of grandchildren a few hours a day or a week. So trying to overcome these problems, we first want to answer the question, can grandparenting help maintaining good cognitive functioning despite the normal aging process? Let me briefly introduce you the outcome we are looking at, which is cognitive functioning. The reason why we look at this is that cognitive functioning, is one of the main goals of active aging, because it's quite closely related to health outcomes and it's a very good predictor of mortality. And in nowadays societies where people are asked more and more to decide for their own future, for their own plans in later life, it's really asked to maintain cognitive functioning until later in life. It is also true that another reason for looking at cognition is the fact that there are recent studies showing that cognitive functioning is plastic, so there is possibility to modify it. Indeed, cognition starts declining from the age of 30 on, more or less. But this doesn't mean that we can't do anything for somehow keeping it. And in fact, the so-called cognitive enrichment theory tells us that there are several activities that might affect different parts of the brain and help us to maintain cognitive functioning. So somehow the motto is, use it or lose it. And within this motto we say, well, grandparenting might indeed help to use it. How? Well, grandparents might do several types of activities with their grandchildren. These are for sure not the same activities they might do when they are involved in peer social engagement, but still, they might be activities that help to maintain an engaged life. So we do expect to find a positive effect on cognitive functioning. I'm not going to go too much into details, but I will briefly tell you a bit more about different dimensions of cognitive functioning, because in fact, we do not expect to find that people who look after grandchildren become magically genius, but we might expect some better ability in maintaining those cognitive functioning that a person already has. So there might be differences in different cognitive dimensions. The data I'm using for this work are data from the Survey of Health, Aging and Retirement in Europe. It's a longitudinal cross-national survey which is representative of a non-institutionalized population aged 50 plus. For this work we have 15 countries and we only use one interview per person. I'm going to tell you more when I talk about the method. will look only at persons with at least one child aged between 50 to 80, and we do some exclusions in our sample, which is persons which are affected by severe diseases. The reason for doing this is that these kind of diseases and the medicines that people take to treat them are clearly affecting not only cognition, but also the fact of doing grandparenting. However, we of course did further robustness checks to control whether this was affecting our results, and it doesn't. We also exclude co-resident grandchild grandparents. As I mentioned before, previous studies have looked at grandparents who were somehow substituting the parents or the custodial grandparents. We cannot really do that. We can't look at this kind of grandparents because in SHARE we have very limited sample of this kind of grandparents. Therefore, we only look at grandparents who are not residing with grandchildren. Well, our sample is of about 5,600 women and 4,700 men. So in SHARE it is first asked whether or not the person, the respondent, has looked after the grandchildren in the previous 12 months. If the answer is yes, it is asked how often did the person look after the grandchildren, and there are four possible answers: almost daily, almost every week, every month, and less often. And further, it is asked the number of hours in these respective categories that persons have looked after grandchildren. What we do is to consider four categories of grandparenting, calculating it as the sum of the hours per day that the person gives care to a grandchild within considering all the grandchildren. So we sum it up. The way in which we constructed these categories is quite technical, but it's derived mainly from previous literature on voluntary activities, which have been shown to be positive for individual well-being. So the four categories, to be simple, will be known or very low, low, middle, and high engagement in grandparental child care. In terms of cognitive functioning, in the shared data we have five measures. I'm going to use only four of them because the fifth one is orientation in time, so saying day, a month, day of a week, and day of a week, day of a month. This measure, however, has a very low variation, so it's not really useful to detect any kind of maintenance or not of cognition. It's mainly for serious diseases. We are going to look at fluency, numeracy, and two measures of memory. The first one, fluency, it's basically naming as many animals as possible within 1 minute. Numeracy are some simple tests, some simple calculation that people are asked to do. And third, we have memory, which are immediate and delayed recall. So there is the interviewer reads 10 words, and the person has to repeat as many words as he or she can within 1 minute, immediately after having heard them, and then again at the end of the cognitive module. I told you that we expect mainly something happening for verbal fluency, more than for the other measures. Well, the reason is that these four tests are measuring something different. So from the psychological literature, we know that we are not looking at the same dimensions of cognition. In particular, verbal fluency is measuring what psychologists called crystallized abilities. These are abilities which are based on their own knowledge, which is accumulated over life, and it might be increasing until a later point and then decrease. While the other tests are measuring something which is, we start to decrease very, very strongly already at younger ages, say around 30. Plus, we have some methodological issues in the sense that, as you can see, numeracy can go only between 1 and 5 because we have only up to 5 numerical tests, and immediate and delayed recall can go only between 0 and 10 because we are asking them to repeat up to 10 words. So because of these reasons, we look at all of them, but we do expect to find mainly some effect of grandparenting on the verbal fluency test. Well, descriptively, what we see is that for all the tests, for both men and women, as you can imagine, pink are women and blue are men, people who are involved more often in grandparental child care, so the involvement is high as compared to medium, low, non, or very low, they report to have lower scores in all the cognitive tests. So descriptively, it seems that the more often a person does grandparenting, the lower is the cognitive test. However, when we look at different characteristics of a sample, once more, up in pink we have women, and in blue down we have men, we see some clear observable selections. In this case, for example, we have that for both men and women, the lower educated are much more likely to do grandparental child care than the higher educated. And we also know that the lower educated, in general, have a lower cognitive functioning than the higher educated. Similar, it's the effect of retirement. Several studies have shown that retirement may contribute to the decline in cognitive functioning because of less engagement in cognitive stimulating activities. And of course, retired women and retired men are much more likely than their working counterparts to do grandparenting. So somehow this tells us that it's not a negative effect of grandparenting, but there might be some selection. So we have to decide what to do in terms of a method to use. And well, on one side, we might use a longitudinal approach as SHARE offers free ways. On the other side, we might have a cross-sectional approach. Both of them have some drawbacks. In particular, the free-wave approach, we might seem to be the best one for our study and would avoid this reverse causality, has two issues. One is a learning effect. Psychologists have shown that people exposed to the same test repeatedly, they might perform better even if actually their cognitive functioning is going down. And the other issue, well, which is quite common in every kind of survey, especially on the elderly surveys, is an attrition issue. People with cognitive problems, they might be the ones who drop out of a survey. So for this reason, we go for a cross-sectional approach, but we use an instrumental variable. What we do, basically, is to instrument our grandparenting variable. We use, instead of grandparenting, a variable which is equal to 1 if the person has at least one grandchild, and equal to 0 otherwise. So what we are doing is basically finding a variable which is strongly associated with doing grandparenting, but at the same time, it doesn't influence cognition per se. So the fact of having grandchildren, it doesn't directly influence cognition. I just want to point out that we do not have childless people in the sample. This is important because if we would have childless people, it might be that the person is childless and therefore also doesn't have grandchildren because of some health-related issue. But we do not have people who didn't have children. Therefore, somehow we are excluding this possible problem. The results are the following. So in the first step, I'm showing you the simple OLS results, so simple models in which we include step-by-step different controls. These results are for women and these are for fluency. What we see here is that at the beginning, so when we only control for the countries that we have inside, the coefficients that we have for low, medium, and high grandparental child care as compared to non or very low are negative. So somehow this tells us that there is a negative association between doing grandparental child care and cognitive functioning, in this case fluency. However, for women we see that once we add several controls, we do not see anymore the negative effect, but we also don't see any significant effect, except for a very high for high involvement in grandparental childcare, where the coefficient turns to be positive and significant. So somehow, already by controlling for the negative selection we mentioned before, we do see some positive effect. And in fact, once we use our instrumental variable, which overcomes the problem of cross-sectional analysis, we do see that for women, the more they do grandparental child care, the better it is their score in fluency. For men, the results are exactly the same. So exactly same type of change, and the only difference is that for men the optimal amount seems to be the medium frequency rather than the high frequency. So the descriptive statistics supported by the OLS models were telling us that grandparenting is negative for grandparents. However, once we use the instrumental variable models, we see that grandparenting might help to preserve the functioning, the cognitive functioning of elderly people. I've not shown the other results because the results for the other tests that I have included do not show a significant effect. So we somehow show that there is no negative effect, but only for the fluency dimension we have a clear, strong, significant positive effect. This is true for both men and women, so we have the same kind of results. And we also have, especially for women, that the effect increases with the amount of supplementary childcare. So this kind of evidence, of course, derives from some unobserved characteristics of the people who do grandparenting, which might be somehow already captured in the controls we include, because in fact we already see a change once we control for level of education, for employment status, participation in other activities, and health variables. So somehow already the observed characteristics are telling us something, but still our model says that we are not capturing something else which grandparents have, and it's a selection. But if we do that, then grandparenting doesn't have a negative effect on cognition, and if it has an effect, this is even positive, as we saw for fluency. So when we reached this point, we thought that we contributed to the debate on intergenerational transfers, but we actually realized that we generated even more questions in our mind, and so we decided to go further. In fact, as I mentioned at the beginning, grandparenting is a social activity, but it might compete somehow with other social activities that have been shown to have a positive effect on cognitive functioning. So in this second part of the work, we are trying to explore whether there is an effect of doing grandparental childcare on the participation in other social activities. Once more, we use the data from CHERE, so I'm not going to tell you more about this. We just do some slightly different selection in here because we are planning to go for also for a longitudinal analysis in this second work, because here we at least do not have the cognition inside, so we do not have the problem of retest effects. But for now, we are still using instrumental variables, and what we are doing is basically trying to see whether doing grandparental childcare has an effect on participating in social activities. We again use the instrumental variable. We instrument it with the number of grandchildren. As you see, it's slightly different from the previous work. The reason is methodological. Here we have a binary outcome variable and we have to use a different instrument. So once more, the information on grandparenting in CHERE is exactly as I mentioned before. At this stage, we stop to the question before. We do not go into the details of the hours. we only have information on doing grandparenting daily, almost every week, almost every month, less often. And the reason why we do not introduce the hours here is that the question on social activities only reaches this kind of detail. So we know whether the person has done one of the following activities almost daily, almost every week, or less often. And the activities which are included are voluntary charity work, caring for a sick or disabled adult, providing help to family, friends, or neighbors, attending an educational course, going to a club, taking part in religious organization, and taking part in political or community-related organization. Previous literature has already shown that these activities, participation in these activities, has a positive effect on cognitive functioning. So we somehow go one step back and see whether there is an effect of grandparenting on the participation in these activities. We further divide these activities in two groups. We define them as hedonistic and altruistic. The reason to do that is just that we thought that these activities are slightly different. So some are really leisure activities, others might be more related to attitudes of altruism. So we distinguish these two groups and we will talk about them separately in these two ways. In this graph, it's simply the percentage of people engaged daily in these activities in our sample. And as you can see, the highest percentages relate to the altruistic activities, which is voluntary work, care for a sick or disabled adult, and also help to family, friends, or neighbors. However, for both men and women, we have about 3 to 4% of a sample that they also participate in some sports, social, or other kind of club. Simple descriptive table about the data we are using. As I said, we again select a sample between 50 and 80 years old. As you can see in the shared data set, we have a very high prevalence of people we are living with a partner, especially among males. The majority of the male sample is retired. For what it concerns women, they are either retired or other, and of course in the category other, they are mainly housewives. Well, we control them for three health characteristics, the same as we did in the previous work. And so we have a measure of symptoms of depression, self-perceived health, and the number of activities in daily living activities in which the person has some problems. This graph tells us a simple descriptive association between doing daily grandparental child care and doing daily social activities. So once more, pink women and blue men. We always have first those who do not do grandparental child care daily, and then those who do grandparental child care daily, and we have it for all the social activities in general, and then the distinction, as I mentioned, hedonistic and altruistic. What you see from this picture is that for both men and women, it looks like those who are doing grandparental child care daily, they are also engaged in social activities daily. And this is true for, especially for the altruistic activities. So we somehow might have a problem of selection as we had before, but as you will see in the results, this is even a bit more complicated to think about. So first we have some simple models. This time it's a probit model for women. Here it's a coefficient for grandparenting daily on daily participation in social activities. First model on all the activities, and then again the model on hedonistic activities, and then altruistic. What we see here is that a simple probit model would confirm descriptive results. So for women, the fact of doing grandparental child care daily is positively associated with participation, especially in altruistic activities, with no effect in the hedonistic ones. But what happens once we use our instrument? Well, this is something completely opposite. So what it comes out is that, especially for altruistic activities, we do see a negative effect. grandparental child care on a daily basis seems to have a negative effect on the participation in altruistic activities. And this is true for women. This result was not too surprising, actually. I mean, it makes sense. If a woman is engaged in grandchild care on a daily basis, might have less time for other kind of activities. So it might simply be that in these models we were not able to capture the characteristics of a woman. But what is even more interesting is what happens when we look at men. So for men, the probit model would be very similar to the one of women, but once we use our instrument, we have completely different picture because the coefficients are not turning positive. But actually, it's even positive. Sorry, they're not turning negative, but actually it's even positive and significant for hedonistic activities. So here something is going on in terms of a selection of who does grandparenting and who does social activities in a different way for men and women. Our way of thinking these results is that, in fact, there is a difference also in the way of reporting grandparental child care between men and women. Men are more likely to do grandparenting when they are in a couple. So basically, when the wife is doing grandparental child care. So their kind of engagement might be very different from the one of women. Women who do grandparental child care daily are really engaged in an activity which might be subtracting time for other kind of activities. Men who are engaged in grandparenting, they might do it on the side of a wife, and actually, it might actually be grandparenting that pushes them to do other activities. Here we are talking about hedonistic activities, and as you saw before, I was mentioning participating in a sport, being involved in some kind of clubs. We do not have clear details about with whom they do that and which kind of clubs they are, so it might be an activity that they do together with a grandchild. So, unfortunately, we do not have information of what they do with a grandchild, but this kind of results might be driven by this difference in the activities that men and women do with grandchildren. So, basically, we have this strange descriptive result, so to say, of a positive association between doing daily grandparenting and doing daily social activities, which is confirmed by the probit models, but it's reversed for women once we introduce our instrumental variable model. This is true especially for altruistic activities, and it's not visible for men. So this is the point where we arrived with our study so far, and well, we clearly have an indication of the fact that the descriptive evidence might not tell us any kind of causal mechanism that is happening, and it's hiding some selection and of who is doing this kind of activities. So the instrumental variables are really helping us to establish some causal effect between grandparenting and several outcomes. We first saw the effect of grandparenting on the cognition of the grandparents, and then the effect of grandparenting on their own engagement in other social activities. Of course, once more, we reach a point with some results where we also have some further questions. And so at this stage, we think that the next step should be to look at the effect on health and cognition. So we saw grandparenting favors cognition, especially some kind of cognition in grandparents. But the literature tells us that also all these activities are positive for cognitive functioning of grandparents. Now the point is, do these activities compete with each other, and which one is more beneficial? And we should also take into account that at the same time when these people are looking after grandchildren and they are engaging in social activities, they are also getting retired. And retirement has been shown to have negative effect on the cognitive functioning of the persons. So what we did so far was finding a positive effect of supplementary grandparental child care on the crystallized cognitive functioning, and highlighting a negative effect of grandparental child care on the altruistic social activities of women. And as I said, we should figure out whether there is an impact, a competing impact on cognitive functioning, and there is the need to include the effect of retirement. So what we are thinking is that retired people have more time for both doing grandparental childcare and for engaging in different types of social activities. However, if grandparental childcare takes our time from doing other social activities, we might have that the positive effect of grandparental childcare would be compensated by an indirect negative effect of not engaging in other activities. Plus, there will be somehow an interaction with a negative effect of retirement. So what's the net effect at the end still has to be calculated as a sort of sum of its direct and indirect effects of several kind of activities on the different dimensions that the brain uses and is stimulated with by these activities. Thank you.
Valeria, probably not many grandparents in the room, but there will certainly be questions, so probably just not.
Hi, thanks a lot. It's really interesting. I was just thinking of a way that you might be able to exploit the cross-country variation. I realise you don't have very much power because there's relatively few countries, but good instrument for the mean country level of grandparental care with the like mean social spending on childcare by the central government, insofar as if there's more money being spent by the government on childcare, grandparents have less opportunity to take care of their grandkids, and therefore you might expect association with cognitive functioning and the other dependent variables.
Yeah, we didn't explore. We did explore the country effects. I mean, what we have here are European countries, and in European countries, the percentage of people involved in grandparental childcare is quite high everywhere. There are differences in terms of the frequency. So we have that Nordic countries are looking after grandchildren more often than southern countries, but southern countries do it with higher intensity. So when it's daily, in the Nordic countries, might be once a week. In the goal of our work, especially in the first one, it doesn't really matter in a sense whether there is the opportunity or not of doing grandparental childcare for the effect on cognitive functioning, in the sense that if one does it, it might benefit. If one doesn't do it, it might not benefit. But it should be the same in every country. Another point would be, following your comment, would be indeed the effect at the social level. That's very true, in the sense, if we're looking at the macro level, the effect of cognition of a society, if there is need to do grandparental childcare, there might be room for improving the elderly cognition within the society, while if there is no need, there will be somehow a missed opportunity to improve cognition. That's a slightly different angle, but of course it might have an impact. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, so as you're probably aware, if you use the instrumental variable approach, you're sort of getting some sort of local average treatment effect. And in the first study, your instrument is whether you have grandchildren or not,
yeah.
Correct? So it's hard to see, I can't visualize how that can produce variation amongst the intensity categories of grandparent care. I can see it might be a very good predictor of whether you give any
well,
care
you do,
or not.
Yes.
So I don't think this is, it's not a very powerful instrument for estimating the intensity of care on cognition. And I think you can see that in your results, because you can see that there's very little difference amongst the categories in the intensity of care. relative to their standard is.
Yeah.
So I think I think your instrument can only give you information about moving from no grand child care to some grand child care, and not on the intensity of the care.
The fact is also that indeed, like our results in terms of frequency of care are not too different from the results of literature on involvement in some voluntary activities. So like what it has already been found and what somehow we confirm is that the effect is really at low levels of engagement. So there it really makes a difference compared to not being engaged in this kind of activity. So yeah, it's right. I mean, it might be partly due to that, but however, we were not so surprised by this kind of result in the sense that it's really confirming different types of approach and different types of literature in terms of where the effect makes a huge difference.
All I'm saying is that with that instrument, that's the only margin you could be investigating.
Yeah, no, it's true. In just one more thing, it's the fact of true, we have also an average effect, but the within individual effect, which would be captured by the longitudinal approach, would be too much affected by the retest effect. So that was somehow the reason for going for this. But yeah.
Follows on nicely from what John was saying is that I'm not convinced that the practice effect is enough of a reason to discount the longitudinal approach, because if you replicated those results with longitudinal analysis and you found broadly similar effects to the instrumental variable approach, that would be particularly compelling evidence that you're finding something real that's going on. And also with the practice effects, surely the practice effects will be everyone has the same amount of practice. If they're in all three waves, everyone has the same amount of practice, and therefore it's not the bias isn't particularly strongly directional in one way or the other. And also the attrition effects, they are problematic with old samples particularly, but you could get around that with some of the weights that the share survey could tell us, for example.
Sure, no. For the attrition effect, I agree with you, and that's why for the second study we would like to try the longitudinal approach. The cognitive measures, it's really an issue in a sense that you're right. If everyone has been interviewed three times, if we only take the sample which is within all the three waves, we might have somehow the same kind of exposure. However, we can't assume that everyone is affected in the same way. You know, like there are education effects, gender effects, and different kind of other characteristics which might affect the way in which the person learns. We have been very careful on this because of suggestions mainly from the psychologist colleagues, which really are saying that for measures of cognition, the longitudinal approach is quite problematic. But you're right that if the results would confirm the same, then it would simply be a double check and it would be even better, sure.
I have one slightly nitpicky point, which was: did you, in your both analyses, did you cluster your standard errors by the household identifier? Because it's a household survey, a lot of
women there. Yes, you're right. No, because the questions on grandparenting are only done to one respondent.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Like the question on grandparenting derives from the question on children, so like if a person has at least one child, then there is a question on grandparenting, and it's the same as the module on children. It's only asked to the family respondent, so we would have only one per couple. And I know that many papers do not show that. It seems that it's not like this, but it is like this.
Thank you, first of all, for the lecture. I think it's safe to say that in the econometric literature, there's sort of an increasing skepticism about IDM methods, especially about whether you can find instruments that are closely enough aligned to the independent variable. Can you expand a little bit about how closely it aligns, how well it fits? Because it seems a little bit of I think as was said before, a little bit of a crude instrument.
Well, it's not the first time that it has been used. This has been used by previous works as well. We also tried alternative instruments, and I honestly do not remember which ones we tried, but we did. after suggestions, but the results were quite quite stable. The reason for doing that was really mainly deriving from previous work using the same type of instrument, and we tried possible tests. We compared those who do not have grandchildren with those who, in our category, do none or very low grandparenting, and we did not find differences. So we just sort of tried as much as possible to test whatever could have been the weaknesses, and we always came up with results that were confirming our choice. I think mainly that point could be the one that one could explore further to see whether we could find something that would give us even more detail in terms of the differences for different levels of engagement. But for what it concerns, like the let's say the two criteria that we should satisfy of relevance and validity, we did find support that our instrument is indeed a good instrument for our variable. For the second part, as I said, we did not use the same instrument. We actually, instead of using whether or not the person has grandchildren, we use the number of grandchildren, because we're using a B-prog bit, and so we have no possibility to use the other instrument. We did try, however, some instrumental variable approach with a B-prog bit, where only the last outcome is considered as dummy, and we use the previous instrument as well, and we do have exactly the same results. So we are somehow trying different kind of instrument or method to see whether whether the results are consistent, and so far they are.
What was interesting to me is that you find that in some ways, you know, sociodemographic characteristics, particularly like you said, education makes a difference, which is why the sign changes and the COVID model and so on. But I'm wondering, if you just ran stratified models, so if you just ran on people who had, say, you know, secondary, post-secondary education, or would you, do you run just models by educational level or just running one just to see if there's just a once we control for education? So just conditioning your models on educational status and then running separate models for low educated and high educated to see, you know, sort of strengthen the direct effect of grandparental care as opposed to just say educational changes.
Right. No, we haven't done models by education. Education is always one of the controls, and in fact, you would see that already in the non-instrumented models we have a change of effect, and education might play a role in there. But no, we haven't done that. We could have a different.
Especially for women, where you see that if you just ran a model for just those with university education or more, you might be able to sort of sell that as, you know, where you think that yes, I mean, you know, there are problems with analysis, but you might be able to, you know, make a bolder pause then for just saying that even look, if you just look at the highly educated as well, or this is just an effect of the care.
Yeah, this is true. The only thing one has to always remember that we are looking at 50 to 80 years old, and especially among the women, the number of high educated is very limited. But yeah, at least like primary and more might be.
Also, do you have a measure of distance to your grandchildren? How far the grandparents and the grandchildren are? The time range measure of how much they're likely to be.
Well, I mean, we have a clear measure of the number of hours of involvement, so that's even better than having a proxy for it.
No, I mean,
but
as an IV.
Yeah, no, I understand, but the problem is that it's true the share contains a question on the distance to each child, and several papers have used this as the distance also to the grandchild, so the children of the child. It's not a perfect measure in the sense that we do not know, like, if a child is divorced or is not living with a partner, the child of a child might not live together. So it will be an assumption, in a sense. It's not the question of where the grandchild lives. We only know whether the grandchild lives with a grandparent or not. And then we know...
So you don't have a distance of...
We have a distance of, like, for the interviewed person, the distance to each of his or her own children. Then you could make an assumption that the children of the children, so the grandchildren, are living with the respective parent, but it's an assumption. So that's why we avoided to do that. But
it's highly likely that there would be...
It could be, but yeah, it could be tried at least, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, another question. I was going to suggest, do you have information on whether the mother or father of the child is employed? You could use that as an instrument. If it's the mother or father who's employed, then she or he is likely to take care of children at home, and therefore there will be less need for the grandparents there.
I'm not sure. I would have to look. Yeah, thanks.
How was the child defined in this study? Because different ages and different stages of development would involve different forms of interactions with grandparents.
Yeah, this is true. We do not have information on the age of a child. So in share, what you know is, for each child of a respondent, what's the youngest child? So like you would have, for each of the grandchildren groups, the youngest one. So you would not really have a full information on the age of a child. We just had a sort of assumption, so to say, in the sense that if a grandparent is looking after a grandchild on a daily basis, which is our goal, we assume that it has to look after the grandchild. So it has somehow a role in which there is involved some either some activity or some responsibility. Because, of course, you might think if a child is too little, in a sense, there is no real activity to do with a grandchild. On the other side, there is a role of being responsible for the grandchild, which might already be a stimulating activity enough. So, no, unfortunately, we do not have the age.
Yeah, so this is related to that answer, the proximity question, is that, I mean, in interpreting this, you're saying this is, it's because they're interacting with the grandchild. But, of course, it also, in order to do care for your grandchildren, you have to interact with your children as well.
Sure.
So, I mean, it could be that it's particularly given this margin of no grandchildren to grandchildren, that having the grandchild is less socially isolating in general. Not so much because, maybe not because you interact with the grandchild, because you interact with the children. You have to get in contact with them regularly,
yes,
see them regularly, and so forth. So I think you'd be a bit wary on the interpretation of, is it the grandchild or is it just the family connection that is helped being established by the grandchild?
Yeah, this is true. It could actually be part of the interpretation, in the sense that our way of interpreting was also deriving from the type of measures that become they seem to be affected, which is this fluency measure. So, like naming animals rather than memorizing 10 words. So that somehow probably also pushed us to think that it's the interaction with a child that makes. That makes a person more able in that kind of task, but definitely that's also part of a way to interpret it, of course.
So, other questions or comments? Okay, if that's the case, then I think we should thank again Valeria and all the participants for this.